Mom, it's snack o'clock.
Apple?
No.
Strawberry waffles?
Yes!
You want wholesome snacks. Your kids want something yummy. Try Kraft Snack Fun Strawberry Waffles. Real dried strawberries, crunchy waffle crisps, and Kraft Colby Jack cheese cubes. Kraft. Family greatly.
Hello, I'm Kathleen Kajioka. On this night in 1938, the Nazis carried out a wave of anti-Jewish violence throughout Germany. Today, that date is referred to as Kristallnacht, or the Night of Broken Glass. From the windows of synagogues, homes, and Jewish-owned businesses senselessly plundered and destroyed. One of those businesses in Berlin was the Zimmer record label, a home for Jewish composers, songwriters, and performers. Tonight, on the anniversary of Kristallnacht, we're airing a powerful radio documentary featuring Zimmer's original vinyl recordings and the stories behind their creation and survival. Meet the man who embarked on a global mission to track down the entire catalog and hear the Zimmer Ensemble perform this music today. Here's part one.
From Toronto, Canada, it's Cafe International. I'm Dan Rosenberg. On today's show, the music created by Jewish Germans living in Berlin in the 1930s on the eve of the Holocaust. It has been resurrected by the Zimmer Ensemble, and what is just as captivating is how, against all odds, the music was rediscovered by an eccentric record collector. We'll hear from that collector, Rainer Lotz, along with members of the Zimmer Ensemble, Daniel Kahn, Alan Byrne, Sasha Luria, Mark Ovnatsky, and Fabian Schnedler. Their remarkable story, up next. Today's episode takes place in Germany, a place where Jews had been living for over 1,000 years by the time our story starts, in 1933. When Adolf Hitler came to power, he immediately stripped away the rights of Jews living in Germany.
The Nazis made very clear that their propaganda during the election time, they meant business.
That's Rainer Lotz, a record collector and history aficionado who was a central player in a true story that sounds like an epic mystery adventure novel. He is now 80 years old and lives in Bonn, Germany, with a record collection that now numbers 60,000.
They prohibited Jewish artists, theater people, composers, lyricists, musicians, singers, whatever, from access to radio.
Artists of Jewish ancestry were no longer allowed to perform in public theaters, on radio, and cinema. But at that time, Jewish culture was German culture. Think Kurt Weill, Mack the Knife, and the Three Penny Opera. Jews across the country sang in German, cabaret songs, operetta, and even drinking songs. The effect of this decree was overwhelming. To make an analogy, if the same thing were to happen today in North America, it would be like banning the music of Drake, Bob Dylan, Itzhak Perlman, and the Klezmatics.
When the Nazis came to power in 1933, one of their first acts was to pass laws severely restricting the professional and private lives of Jewish German citizens.
That's Zimmer Ensemble composer and arranger Alan Byrne. He was born in Bloomington, Indiana. Byrne now lives in Weimar, Germany, where he runs a cultural center.
Many hoped that that would be the worst of it and that they would find a way to live with it. But we now know, of course, that this was just the first step in marginalizing Jews in Germany and eventually turning them into radical others whom one could exterminate with impunity.
In 1933, Jewish musicians in Germany found themselves unable to perform publicly, but they were able to record their music at a pair of small record labels. Again, Rainer Lotz.
You cannot play anymore for non-Jewish audiences. And all the recordings made by the two companies could only be sold in Hebraic bookshops to Jews.
Singer Daniel Kahn.
a Berlin music label from the 1930s, from the Nazi period, that was exclusively concerned with recording and issuing music by Jewish artists. It was kind of a catch-all for all of these artists in Berlin at the time who were forbidden by Nazi law to record for anyone else.
So two labels, one called Zimmer and the other called Lucrophone, set up shop, recording a vast spectrum of music performed by Jewish Germans, classical soloists, cabaret, religious cantorial music, Yiddish folk songs, and even German drinking songs. Daniel Kahn.
That's a snapshot of the cosmopolis that Berlin was, even going on into the Nazi era. The rich tapestry of Berlin life, even just through the lens of Jewish life in Berlin.
Berlin in the early 1930s was also home to many Jewish refugees fleeing discrimination in Eastern Europe, and these labels recorded their music as well. Singer Sasha Luria.
It was like a Noah's Ark. They couldn't do it anywhere else.
Reiner Lotz, the diligent record collector and history enthusiast, did quite a bit of research into the background of the label owners, including Moritz Levine.
Moritz Levine was a very liberal, westernized Ashkenazi. He probably didn't remember he was of Jewish ancestry until the Nazis reminded him.
After the Berlin Olympics in 1936 and the global media focused their attention on other matters, the crackdown on Jews accelerated. And on November 9th, 1938, during the Gestapo-led pogrom called Kristallnacht, countless Jewish institutions and businesses were burned, including these two record labels in Berlin. Alan Byrne.
On November 9, 1938, the Gestapo went on basically a pogrom, a rampage throughout Germany and burned down many, many synagogues and smashed many, many stores, and quite a few people were killed. Lots of people were arrested for many Jews and also for other people who were opponents of the Nazis. That was the final bell. They recognized at that point that it wasn't just a bunch of hand-waving about violence, but it was really going to get more and more and more violent. And actually, on this night, the Gestapo raided Hirsch Levin's store and destroyed all of the stock and destroyed all of the master recordings, too. And at that moment, it really looked like the story of the Zimmer label had just vanished from history and from historical memory.
By 1945, 6 million Jews were murdered by the Nazis, including most of the musicians that recorded for these record labels in Berlin. Fast forward to the early 1990s, when Reiner Lotz heard about the Zimmer and Lucrophone labels. Alan Byrne.
There was just a one-sentence mention of it in a catalog for another exhibition that happened in Berlin at the Academy of the Arts. And there it said, well, we heard about this Zimmer label, which apparently recorded Jewish artists, but we aren't able to find out anything more about it. There's nothing left. And for Reiner Lotz, that was like throwing down the handkerchief.
And that arose my interest, and I said, if nobody else could do it, I could probably do it, because I have a very thorough knowledge of recording history in Germany. So that got me on the track.
Sasha Luria.
Reiner Lotz saw a mention of it somewhere and basically made it his life mission to find all these recordings.
Reiner Lotz spent his career, well, at least the day job part of it, working in development aid.
So I lived and worked in Bolivia, in Egypt, in the Sudan, in Thailand, in Uganda, before I returned to Germany and joined the Ministry for Economic Cooperation to deal with development aid. It's the equivalent, more or less, of USAID. So it was my duty to travel around the world and check on projects and see whether they did all right. And that, again, helped me do all my contacts around the world. And all my research is hobby research, which I did after hours and still do after hours.
That was something he also kept stressing. He spent years and years traveling the world, looking for these lost Jewish recordings from 1930s Berlin, but only looked for the records after work.
And all that is done and has been done after hours, and now after I'm retired. I'm retired now. I'm 80 years of age now.
Wherever Rainer Lotz traveled, he looked for records, and he kept finding them, scattered around the world. These were the days before eBay, before Amazon, so he searched through flea markets and used record shops. He also had a network of fellow record scavengers with whom he emailed lists of old Jewish recordings to help find for the project. As it turned out, many Jews who escaped fascism and ended up in the far corners of the world often brought old 78 recordings with them. Sasha Luria.
Because when people were fleeing, when people were leaving, very often they would take one or two of their favorite records with them to keep their love, keep their culture with them.
Let's take a step back and think about this for a minute. You're fleeing Nazi Germany. You can only take a suitcase or two. What do you take? Clothes, shoes, valuables, important papers, family photos. Why schlep heavy and fragile 78 RPM records? Alan Byrne.
By the way, makes it all the more incredible that anyone fleeing would take a bunch of those recordings with them. Because if you know those kinds of recordings, you just need to look at them the wrong way and they break.
Indeed, sometimes the only copy of certain records Lotz found were broken, even shattered.
It came shattered into pieces. And it was at that time the only known copy of that particular record. I carried the shards, the pieces of the broken records, on my lap to London from Berlin and took it to the specialist in mending broken shellac records, John R.T. Davies. And he managed to put together the various pieces, and we were then able to digitize it, but it would still have plenty of clicks. And we went to the effort of restoring this and all the clicks.
In one case, the search pitted family members against each other. Part of the Zemmer catalog included stunning liturgical music recorded by Israel Bakan, a cantor who was murdered by the Nazis in Krakow, Poland.
He recorded some extraordinary sights. I'm not Jewish myself, and I don't understand the synagogue song, the meaning of the songs. But I am fascinated by the artistry, by the musicability, by the musicality. He improvises. He has an extraordinary voice.
Rainer Lotz tracked down his brother.
Little place in the Negev in Israel lived a very old man, the brother of a recording artist, a cantor. And this man, Bakon, said, "I would dearly love to hear the voice of my brother again."
The problem was that Bakon's brother in Israel didn't have the records. They were located in New York with one of Bakon's nephews.
I knew that Bakon had family members in New York, and I asked them whether they have any recordings by Israel Bakon. They said yes, and I said, "Could I have it for this project?" And they said no.
Bakon's nephew refused because he didn't want religious music to be part of the same collection that included cabaret songs. But Lotz was determined to obtain this recording for the project and to share it with Bakon's brother back in Israel.
So I had to employ middlemen to pretend it, to listen to that for some other reason, and then, you know, it was incredible. And before I started that project, I didn't know that the jury could be that, what do you call that, fractionized.
In the end, Lotz managed to track down the entire catalogs of Lucrophon and Zemmer, 281 records in all. no story is as surprising as how Lotz managed to locate one of the last records for the project.
We were looking all the time for recordings by a violin player, Andreas Weisgerber.
To contemporary listeners, the name Weisgerber probably doesn't mean very much. However, back in the early 20th century, Weisgerber was one of the greatest violinists living in Germany.
His family was originally from Sadagura near Czernowitz in Bukovina.
Zimmer Ensemble violinist Mark Ovnatsky.
He was born in 1900 in Volos in Greece. He was a wonderful violinist.
Andreas Weisgerber was a child prodigy, and at the age of 7 was invited to perform for Sultan Abdul Hamid II of the Ottoman Empire, who gave him 5 parrots as a reward. Weisgerber moved to Budapest to study with Jenő Hubay, a legendary violinist and composer at the time. And by the 1920s, Weisgerber was touring Germany and Europe, accompanied by equally renowned pianists such as Claudio Arrau and Eugène d'Albert. When the Nazis took power, even a star like Weisgerber was prohibited from performing publicly or recording on any label, except ones that sold their materials exclusively at Jewish bookshops to Jewish audiences. Rainer Lotz noticed that in the Lucrophone catalog, Weisgerber had recorded an album back in the 1930s while living in Germany. Lotz had searched for years in vain for this record. He learned that Weisgerber managed to immigrate to Palestine, where he became the concertmaster at the Symphony Orchestra before his death in Tel Aviv in 1941. So Lotz traveled to Israel, where a friend invited him to an afternoon coffee party.
So in the afternoon, they invite each other for coffee and cake and talk about, you know, gossip and things. And my friend mentioned this project of ours and that there was this man, Andreas Weisgerber, who defied us. And then one lady at the coffee clutch told him, but there is a relative living right across the street. I think it's his elder brother. And he went over there, and lo and behold, they had a record album. And there was also one empty sleeve which said broken record. And he took the record out, and it was that one recording he made for Lucrophon in Berlin for the Jewish company. And that record had a chunk bitten out of it. So just like a half moon, you know, somebody had bitten into it. Now again, he carried it in his hand luggage to Bonn. I carried it to a specialist in Berlin, and we had the whole thing restored except the very short bits that were missing because the chunk was thrown away. It didn't exist anymore. And we asked the piano player and the violinist to replay the missing bars, which they did. And electronically, we filled it into the correct space. Today, you won't hear the difference.
We are going to finish up the first part of our report with the actual recording of Andreas Weisgerber that Rainer Lotz restored, followed by a new version of the same piece by the Zimmer Ensemble's Mark Kamnatsky. was the Zemmer Ensemble's Mark Kovnatsky on violin, performing a Chardash by Yeno Hubai. Kovnatsky studied violin at Moscow's Classical Academy and was the longtime director of the Moscow Yiddish Festival. When we come back, we will hear the incredible stories of how the members of the Zemmer Ensemble brought the recordings from the 1930s back to life and learn about the songs that represent the last gasp of Jewish culture in Berlin before the Holocaust by musicians that were later murdered in Auschwitz. In the year 2012, 2 decades after Rainer Lotz began searching for the old 78 RPM records made by Jewish German citizens on the eve of the Holocaust, the Jewish Museum in Berlin decided to do an exhibition on Jewish culture in the early 1930s. Singer Fabian Schnedler is a manager in the education department at the museum.
While we were doing the research for that exhibition, we found this record by a label called Zemmer, and this should be heard, and not only in an audio station in the exhibition. So I said, why don't we ask Alan Byrne to think of something we could do with this material?
And that is how the Zemmer Ensemble was born. Named after one of the record labels in 1930s Berlin that made these recordings that were thought to be destroyed on Kristallnacht, including this magnificent Chardash, based on a melody by Yeno Hubai from an old Andreas Weisgerber recording. Alan Byrne has been involved in Yiddish music for decades. He co-founded the klezmer group Brave Old World that toured the globe in the 1990s with Itzhak Perlman. But the Zemmer project proved to be one of the most challenging Alan Byrne had ever undertaken. There was no sheet music, so they had to listen to the old recordings and recreate musical scores.
Wir fliegen über den Ozean und hoch in die Stratosphäre. Wir sehen von New York bis Teheran und holen uns Land aus dem Meer. Wir sprechen von Oslo nach Sahara.
Much of the music that the Zemmer Ensemble performs is sung in German, the language spoken by Jewish Germans of the 1930s. This song is called The World Has Become Small, and its lyrics sound as if they could have been written today. Singer Sascha Luria.
Die Welt ist klein geworden, and it's a song in German about how all the technology is being developed. We can talk from one side of the world to another without raising our voices, and we have made light electric, but we still cannot see each other.
Singer Daniel Kahn.
The world has grown small. Yeah, it talks about the interconnectedness of everything and how we were able to connect with the whole world with wires and rails, and we can fly up in the air, and yet we've never been more out of touch with each other. We will never understand each other. We can see each other across the globe, but we can't really see each other as people. It's that great sense of being isolated and hyper-connected at the same time.
This song was written in 1930s Berlin, a time with cars, airplanes, telephones, primitive computing, mass communication. And here's a song about, despite all these technological revolutions, people are only becoming more isolated. But the song perhaps has another meaning as well. Alan Byrne.
This idea that progress is going to save us, that technological progress is going to save us, there was already a strong reaction against that. And that has meaning on a lot of different levels. The Nazis embraced technology so far that actually they considered human beings to be just gears in a big machine, which was basically the machine of fascism. So this criticism of technology is also a criticism of the Nazi use of technology.
The lead singer of this song, and for a great deal of the Zemmer Ensemble's repertoire, is Sascha Luria. She grew up in a Jewish family in Riga, and her family barely made it out of Latvia before the Nazis invaded in 1941. Sascha Luria.
My great-grandfather was listening to German radio at nights. People in Latvia were waiting for Germans to come and liberate them.
At the time, Indeed, many in Latvia were hoping for the Germans to invade and free them of Soviet rule. But Luria's family had been listening to the radio and had heard of the atrocities committed against Jews under Nazi rule.
My great-grandfather packed his family, packed his pregnant wife and two children, and they got a horse and a carriage, and they just took off east. Wow. And everybody was telling him, Yaakov, what are you doing? Germans are coming to liberate us. And he was like, no, we all should go, and you should go too. They wound up in middle Russia, in Mardva, very far, so Siberia.
To now is Kaddish for a Jewish soldier, mourning the death of a Jewish soldier who fought with the German army in World War I, which shows how quickly alliances changed in Europe. Sasha Luria.
It's about the First World War, a mother teaching her child to first pray for her husband as he is in the war, and then when she finds out that he's not coming back, to say Kaddish.
Wenn Lebke ist keine Amerika gefunden, hat sein Weibel stark geklugt.
Each song in the Zimmer Ensemble repertoire is like a dramatic chapter in an epic novel, one that reveals the incredible, vibrant, and diverse culture within Berlin's Jewish community just before the Holocaust. Some are indeed in Yiddish, such as this one, Lebke Goes to America, performed by Daniel Kahn and originally recorded by Pinchas Lavender in the early 1930s. Daniel Kahn.
Lebke fährt nach Amerika, which is the story of a man going to America to make a living, and he abandons his wife in Russia, and she withers away while he starts a new life.
Looking back, we know what happens to the family that Lebke abandoned under Nazi rule.
When Lebke is kein Amerika gefunden, hat sein Weibel stark geklugt. Die Furster weg. Hoi weet ze meine Juden, hat Lebke zu ihrer Zoe gesucht. Ich fahr weg in die weite Welt mit Pernusse, wird mich Gott beglicken. Die wirst sehen, für den ersten Geld, will ich dir eine Schiffskarte schicken. Gedenkchen, Lebke, die lust mich mit a Kind, aber Schiffskarte sollst die bald abspuren. Oi, sorg nicht, Reisel, bleib schon mir gesinnt, in Lebke is a weggefahren. Bei Schulem ist Lebke kein Amerika umgekommen, geworden dort eine Maschine. Stark zu der Arbeit hat er sich geliebt, geworden dort eine große Verdiene. Und Lebke lebt in dem Land, in dem er ist in New York. Schreiben a Briefele zu sein Weiber heim, hat Lebke nicht kein Zeit. In Reisel sitzt bei dem Wiggele ungespart, den Kopf gebeugend tief in Arbeit. verblieben es immer, ihnen es kommt kein Brief. Sie singt ein Lied allein dem Kind, ein Lululu, vor den Wellen mir geschwind. Ein Lied, wie es spott und es so ist, geht hin, weiß, versteht alles dahin. Mit der Landsfreude läuft rum, fast Schwester will jetzt kaufen, aber Brillant in dem Ring. Nur Blitzen hat in die Mai der Mond für sein Weib und Kind. Geschrieben hat Liebke kein Russland, aber Welle geschwind. In Reisel liegt dort nebig krank, fin Hinger und fin Kält. Bei ihr in Kopf lebt a Gedanke, als ihr Mann ist gegangen von der Welt. Die Augen im Kopf rein ganz tief, die Hosen in schön grün. In Finn, Leibchen, das stickele Brief ist noch als nicht du. Nur plötzlich von Leibchen ein Brief von mir kommen, sie springt darauf von dem Bett und sich auf gerissene Leinen nehmen. Geschnippt hat ihr Leibchen agett. Verleuven hat Reisel ihr gesinnt. In Kohl, wo sie sucht zu dem Kind. Mir haben ihm sie ist gehofft und gewahrt. Der Tate hat ins Beiden abgenaht. Schlaf ein, mein Kind, ein Juliu. Vor den Wellen mir nicht mehr. Zieh dein Tate. In Leibchen mit sein Kalle Sisse, gehen beide zu der Kippe. In Reisel dort klugt, in der Hasen da sucht, Baruch Ato. Shemoy, mesmeh chusen v'im hakalo. Amen. In Reisel, Reisel is geblieben.
That was the Zemmer Ensemble with Leibke Goes to America. After the break, the conclusion of our report, and we will hear what happened to Berlin's Jewish musicians who could not escape Nazi Germany. Going to close with the darkest song in the collection, Vorbei, which means it's over. Sasha Luria.
It's over, Vorbei, it's gone. The first kiss,
the first letter, the first look. You have made me feel so good, and we had this amazing time together, and now it's all gone.
In the 1930s, this song was recorded by Dora Gerson, a huge star in Germany before the Nazis came to power. She was in silent films and many successful theatrical plays in Berlin's biggest theaters. She was also the original performer of the song we heard earlier, The World Has Become Small. Dora Gerson's first husband was Veit Harlan, who, under the Nazis, became a director of anti-Semitic propaganda films under Joseph Goebbels.
She reached out to him trying to get help, and he just ignored her and pretended like he didn't know her.
Gerson was captured along with her second husband, their two young children, aged 5 and 2, and they were all murdered in Auschwitz in 1943. This is the old 78 RPM recording of Dora Gerson singing Verbi. It's over. Listening to the song now, it is impossible not to think that when she says Verbi, it's over, she's referring to Jewish life in Europe.
It's hard to separate those things. When I see a beautiful young Jewish actress, German Jewish actress, who died in Auschwitz, and she sings this song, it's over. I'm not sure I can separate those things.
Against all odds, it wasn't over for this music. Rainer Lotz tracked down all 281 recordings, and the Zimmer Ensemble has brought this music back to life, songs that paint the detailed and complex picture of the diversity of Jewish life in Berlin under Nazi rule in the 1930s, with lyrics that are incredibly relevant even today. The Zimmer Ensemble's new album is called Rescued Treasure. For Cafe International, I'm Dan Rosenberg in Toronto, Canada.
Thank you. festgeglaubt, es müsste ewig sein. Nun gehst du von mir fort und lässt mich so allein. Vorbei, vorbei, vorbei. Ein letzter Gruß vorbei.
That was the Zimmer Ensemble with Forbye, It's Over. A great song and also a powerful omen of what was to become of the music and all the people who made it. You've been listening to the story of the Zimmer record label, the home of Jewish composers, songwriters, and performers of 1930s Berlin. Thanks to Dan Rosenberg for telling this amazing tale of creativity, destruction, and restoration. I'm Kathleen Kadzioka of the New Classical FM. Thank you for listening.